Good morning, counsel. This is the case of Mallendorf versus Mallendorf. Mallendorf versus Mallendorf. We will begin with the court introducing ourselves and then introducing you. I'm Mike Havocan, the Chief Justice, and then by seniority of members of the court, we go to
Justice Miller Lerman here, appearing by WebEx. Good morning.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik.
John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Ms. Vogel, are you here this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Ms. Shannon, are you here this morning?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
I do not.
Very good. Then Ms. Vogel, good morning again to you. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Katie Vogel, and I, along with the law firm of Koenig Dunn, represent plaintiff appellant Jennifer Rasmussen Sagan. I would like to reserve 2 minutes of time for rebuttal. The facts of this case are as follows. The parties divorced in 2010, and appellant was awarded sole legal and physical custody of the party's two minor children. In 2013, the parties agreed that appellant could move with the minor children from Nebraska to Tennessee. In the 2013 order, there was a $600 downward deviation in appellee's child support obligation to account for the travel expenses it was expected that he would incur traveling to Tennessee to visit the minor children and for abatement and child support for his extended summer parenting time. In 2016, appellant filed a complaint requesting modification to the party's parenting time and child support. The parties eventually reached an agreement resulting to a change in parenting time, child support, and that the appellee would receive a $645 downward deviation in his child support obligation for summer parenting time and travel expenses. This is documented on Worksheet 5 and attached as an exhibit to the 2016 order. Despite the party's agreement in 2016, appellee did not travel to Tennessee to visit his children. Additionally, the parties had changes in their respective incomes, and appellee had another child. Therefore, in 2019, appellant filed to modify child support based upon appellee's increased income and appellee's failure to travel to Tennessee to visit the minor children. The matter went to trial on October 15, 2019, during which the appellee testified he had never traveled to Tennessee to visit the children, and he also provided testimony as to his current wages and that he had had another child. After appellant rested on her case in chief for modification and child support, the judge stated on the record that she did not believe that she had authority to modify the downward deviation to child support because it came from a consent decree. Based upon the court's statements on the record with respect to the downward deviation, which had been the primary issue in dispute between the parties, they were able to resolve all remaining outstanding issues between when trial ended on October 15th and when the second day of trial had been scheduled for December 29th. As a result, appellee had dismissed his application for contempt, and the court entered an order of modification which incorporated the court's findings as to the deviation and to the remainder of the party's agreement.
Since that was the agreement of the parties, does that make that a consent decree?
The 2020 order on appeal today,
yes.
Your Honor? Your Honor, to be clear, if the court had not made the finding on the record that it did not believe it had authority to modify that downward deviation, had that not been stated, the parties would have continued through trial and would have submitted the issue to the judge for findings.
Didn't the judge also say that the court would keep an open mind as it went forward from that point?
It did say that, Your Honor. However, appellant had already rested on her case in chief on the issue of child support. And I think that in reading the record that the comments were more focused on the contempt aspect of the case.
Counsel Appellee had not rested, isn't that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And was there ever an issue that was finally submitted to the trial court for a factual finding or a decision in this case?
Your Honor, no issue was necessarily submitted because of the comments stated on the court, stated by the court on the record at the end of the October 15th date. And to be clear, there was no counterclaim filed by Appley in this case. There was simply an answer.
You, a moment ago, described the court's comments as a factual finding. Do you believe that's accurate, or was the court here invited to share concerns after the completion of some but not all of the evidence?
Your Honor, it was specifically put into the order of modification that the court made certain findings for that reason, to reflect that this was not something, this was not one of the parties deciding this. This was based on the comments of the judge from the bench.
I beg your pardon. Do you think that the comments of the judge were a mistake of law?
Yes, Your Honor. We do believe that they were a mistake of law because key here to the issue is child support. And the underlying factor on that is a finding by the court to evaluate the child support and determine that it is in the best interest of the children. So we believe that once the child support became right for review, there had been a change in incomes, there had been a second born child, all the factors within the child support guidelines should have been evaluated, including this deviation that had been allocated as to travel expenses that were not being incurred.
Maybe you can help me out. Was this a mistake of law? Was it musings? Did the judge proceed to apply the correct law?
We would say, Your Honor, that the court did not apply the correct law as to whether or not she could change the 2016 stipulated order with respect to the downward deviation. We believe that was an error by the district court. Yes.
Didn't the parties take that issue from the court and reach an agreement that assumed the judge was going to make that sort of a finding and then negotiate, if you will, a modified child support that everybody could live with?
Your Honor, the parties, based upon those statements by the court, there were no other factual disputes or issues with the child support calculation. Parties were clear on what their income was. Parties were clear as to that there was another child that had been born. They were clear as to health insurance. There was no dispute. The only dispute was really this travel deviation.
The travel deviation was first implemented in 2013, then it was reaffirmed in 2016, and at that time there had been no travel to Tennessee, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. In 2016, there had been no travel, and the deviation changed from $600 in the 2013 to $645 in the 2016, as did the entire child support calculation and child support amount changed between those 2 years as well.
So even if we were to assume that the trial court, in fact, had the authority to change that, why would it be an abuse of discretion not to leave the travel arrangement in place, given that there still was the possibility of travel, even though it had not been exercised?
Your Honor, whether there have been the possibility of travel, I think the obligation really came down to this, to the court making a finding as required under the child support guidelines that the continued deviation was in the best interest of the kids. And section 4-210 of the child support guidelines, in fact, say that documented substantial and reasonable long distance costs associated with visiting or parenting time need to be considered with the court in order to permit a deviation. And that simply just was not the facts of the case.
So your position is that the law on this should be, notwithstanding what the parties agreed to or what the history of a case might be, it's use it or lose it.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be what we would, that is our position. And that's why,
have we ever articulated such a proposition in our child support jurisprudence?
With respect to child support and this specific deviation we're looking at here, no, but I think the court has made clear that once the child support door is open to modification under the guidelines, we need to ensure that the support moving forward is consistent with the guidelines then in place. And so it opens it up for a full review of calculation and should in no way be limited in scope.
Okay, so in 2013, and 2016 and 2020, you had the parties living the same locations, Nebraska and Tennessee. That didn't change, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that, in your view, is not enough to maintain a deviation for potential travel for visitation.
Your Honor, it's not, because the appellee in this case was not using his travel time. And so the court had the opportunity now to look at all the economic realities of the party, income, afterborn children, expenses, and travel, and summer abatement of child support due to extended summer parenting time, and take all that into consideration to determine that what the best interest of the children determine the support should be here in 2019 and 2020. And I see I'm out of time, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Ms. Shannon, good morning to you.
May it please the court, and good morning to you as well. I represent the defendant appellee, Brian Mallendorf, and we're asking the court to affirm the lower court's ruling and find that it was not an abuse of discretion for the court to find that there was no material change in circumstances regarding the downward deviation.
To what extent should we be dwelling on the trial court's comment about whether it had authority to modify the deviation?
Well, I think that's instrumental in the fact that the downward deviation was considered in 2013 in a stipulated removal order, and again in 2016 in the stipulated modification order. And also, it's important to recognize that the language of those two orders changed, where the wording in the 2013 order reflected that the downward deviation was based in part that appellee will travel to Tennessee. In 2016, when the appellant brought the action based on the fact that appellee had not traveled to Tennessee, the language in that 2016 order in regards to that issue was virtually identical to the 2013 order. However, the word will changed to the word may, reflecting that it was understood that that travel was going to be discretionary.
You are not taking the position, are you, that the trial court was without authority to do away with the deviation if it thought that was in the best interest of the children?
That's correct, Your Honor. The court had authority to do so. However, as far as the decision rising to the level of an abuse of discretion, that situation is not in place when it was a consent decree and the underlying facts had not changed.
Was the 2020 order of modification also a consent decree?
I believe it was, Your Honor, when the decision the order was put into place, and it's clear from the record that at the end of the first day of hearing, Appley had not rested. And so there's further evidence that could have been adduced and put on the record. And so I don't believe that there was a finding of fact on the matter.
What was the agreement between the parties that was made after the first day of trial?
The agreement that was made between the parties was in regard to what the child support was going to be based on the judge's comments of her potential decision regarding the downward deviation, as well as my client's change in income and the afterborn child.
That was the entirety of the agreement?
To my recollection, yes.
Is any portion of the party's settlement agreement in this case contained within our record?
We did not come back in December and put anything on the record that the order then was stipulated to and put in front of the judge.
Thank you.
Is there a written stipulation?
Other than the order, other than the 2020 order.
So you just, somebody prepared the order and somebody approved it and then the judge signed it. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Back to this issue of deviation and it being decided. So in 2016, the court modifies it from travel expenses to potential travel expenses. Is that correct? That allows the deviation. If the mother comes back in 2019 and has other reasons to challenge the deviation other than where the parties live, does the court have authority then to revisit that deviation at that time? I.e. the child's expenses have gone up, there's certain extracurricular activities they're involved in, things of that nature. Can the court revisit that issue of the deviation?
I would argue against the revisiting of the deviation because it was agreed to by stipulation. Both parties were represented by counsel, and the wording regarding the deviation is spelled out both in the orders and in the worksheet 5 that was attached to the orders reflecting exactly why that deviation was granted.
So after 2016, the deviation is basically an untouchable issue.
Yes, Your Honor, because that specific issue had been addressed in 2016, then the appellant was barred from coming back and having that exact same issue addressed again in 2019 when the circumstances regarding the abatement hadn't changed.
Thank you.
So your position is, as I understand it, and I want you to either agree or disagree with the fairness of this characterization, but you're severing the analysis into parts and pieces of child support or child support-like obligations under a decree and saying some are fixed and some are not by prior agreements. Is that a fair characterization of your argument?
Yes, Your Honor, and it can be done because of the worksheet 5 and the specific reference of exactly why the deviation is granted and how much that deviation is granted for.
Don't our statutes provide that child support is not subject to being locked in stone by agreement of the parties or otherwise? And doesn't our case law make it pretty clear that prohibition on locking child support in stone extends to the sorts of things that are what we might call quasi-child support, like travel expenses to visit children? I'm having a real problem with your argument that anyone can ever lock a trial court out of modifying child support or child support-like obligations. Do you have any authority in our case law or the statutes to support your argument in that regard?
Your Honor, the authority comes from the fact that the in this case, these specific issues were contemplated in 2016. And so nothing changed as far as the what the deviation was based on. The travel expense, the issue of traveling was the same in 2016 as 2019. And the wording in the 2013 order reflected there would be travel. And in 2016, it was reflected that there may be travel. So in this case, it's narrowly tailored to reflect that this exact issue was specifically contemplated between the parties.
So it's you're adhering to this argument regarding divisibility or severability of the issue. A child support is not just one unitary issue. It's little bits and pieces that add up to a big issue. That's your position.
Your Honor, I do believe it's severable in this case. And I would also point out that as far as the best interest of the children being taken into consideration, appellant had the opportunity to do that in 2016 when she evaluated this same set of facts and they entered into a stipulated agreement at a time when she was represented by counsel.
So assume that we disagree with your argument about divisibility or severability. What's your best argument about no abuse of discretion?
Well, there's not an abuse of discretion when the trial court had the opportunity to listen to the parties and take into consideration the same set of facts was addressed in 2013 and 16 and again in 2019 and had the ability to find that there simply wasn't a material change in circumstances and was in her right to use a higher level of scrutiny for a consent decree.
Thank you.
So the facts that changed in 2019 are the father having a subsequently born child and changes of income of the parties. And that's all the court really had to consider as different factual issues. Is that accurate?
Yes, I would agree with that statement, Your Honor.
And based on that, you don't believe there's an abuse of discretion maintaining the deviation?
No, Your Honor, not when the issue of deviation was protected by the language in the 2016 order reflecting that Appellee may travel to Tennessee. And so that was a discretionary issue for Appellee, which the appellant agreed to.
Couldn't the trial judge have rejected the party's agreement to continue the downward deviation in that same amount the third time? The judge didn't have to accept the party's agreement with respect to child support. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. Just as the judge didn't have to accept that same agreement in 2016, but it was found to be in the best interest of the minor children and it was accepted.
And if it was found not to be in the best interest of the minor child in 2019, could the court then abandon the deviation?
I believe that the 2016 decree affords a higher level of scrutiny and that the appellant didn't provide any proof to show that the current order is not in the best interest of the minor children.
So it's a burden of proof issue, not just a consent agreement. Is that correct? Or is it more a consent agreement and less a burden of proof issue?
I believe that it's more of a consent agreement, higher scrutiny being applied to that consent agreement when appellant was represented by counsel in 2016. She agreed to the changing in the order from will travel to may travel, and the deviation was well defined to reflect that it was based on both travel and an abatement of travel.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shannon. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. So that concludes versus Mallendorf. again, counsel, thank you for participating by WebEx. And it is indeed a very interesting process, but it affords us all an opportunity to do what we would normally do in a courtroom. So again, thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Hogan versus Hogan. Goodbye, counsel.
Thank you.